Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, joined by John Roerink and our new reporter, Lauren Gibbons. A little later, we're going to be speaking with Greg McMaster. He is the state representative who was not successful in the 37th State Senate District earlier this month. But first, John, Lauren, happy Labor Day.
Happy Labor Day.
Yeah.
It's quiet. The tumbleweeds are blowing down Ottawa Street. State parking lot's barely full.
We are taping on the Friday before Labor Day weekend, and this is traditionally one of the deader days of the whole year.
Everybody wants to expand that three-day weekend into four.
We can't blame them. For you people who are listening to the podcast now, not on Labor Day, but the days after Labor Day, we're going to be taking a look in this podcast forward at the elections from now until November 4. But first, let's introduce our podcast listeners to our new reporter, Lauren Gibbons. Thanks for joining us today. I don't know if you really had a choice, though, because we just pulled you in and said you have
to
say.
I didn't really have a
choice. if it makes any consolation, we're not really moving you anywhere. You're just right here at your desk, as I'm right here at my desk. Tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
Well, I recently graduated from Michigan State. I majored in journalism and history. I interned at MERS a few years ago, did a lot of stuff for them when I was a junior in college, and most recently, I interned at the Columbus Dispatch down in Ohio. I know. sorry, Michigan listeners. But originally, I'm from Holt, Michigan, so not too far down the road from Lansing here. And I guess a fun fact about me is that I Irish step danced for a long time.
Is that right?
It is.
We were talking about getting Francis involved in that.
Oh, well, there you go. That is a fun thing.
Anyway, that's pretty cool. And then when you interned here, you were also interning at MLive at the same time.
I was. I freelanced for MLive at the same time, and I did a lot of local government and business. So I've done politics, I've done local government, business, kind of most of the news spectrum here. A lot of features and cops, courts. Yeah. I've done a little bit of everything.
And you were at the Grand Rapids Press for a summer, too, right?
Yes, I did mostly cops reporting for them because they didn't have a cops reporter at the time, so I was essentially the cops intern.
Now, trick question, what's your favorite beat, politics, business?
Oh, well, cops. I mean, I think I'm obligated to say politics now.
Well, hopefully there isn't a lot of cops with the politics.
Exactly. It happens once in a while, though, they do intermingle. You know,
I remember a couple of years ago when somebody got a DUI. So sometimes they intermingle.
Exactly. Hopefully they won't this year.
Yeah, we've got enough to cover with all the different elections going on. Let's kind of segue into that, John. What can we expect from the governor's race and the U.S. Senate race in these next 2 months?
It's going to be decision time, I think, on the Terry Lynn Land bid. If the polls further separate, I think that race might fade away. I'm not saying that it's going to happen, but I think she's got probably a 2 or 3 week window here to prove her mettle as a candidate. I think with the governor's race, I mean, the polls, it's a dead heat. And I think how well the governor's team responds and gets his message up in the next week is going to say a lot. And it's also going to impact a lot of these other races that we're going to talk about later today. So,
and I wanted to touch on that, too. How long does Terry Land have before these outside groups like Ending Spending just pull the plug and say, you know what, we can get a Senate majority of Republicans by playing elsewhere?
I think if she can hold within 5 or 6, I don't think you pull the plug. And I say this because if the dynamics of the governor's race change, that could actually pull a few more percentage points towards her. But I think they may be able to win the U.S. Senate without her, but you want to hedge your bets.
But also, you don't want to waste money, too. And so if you're getting into October and it's still a 5.8, you know, even at 5.6,
I think you're right. I think they will start considering it. But if she's in that 4 to 6 range down, I think you keep her in the game.
You know what's amazing to me is how this has not been the Republican year we thought at the beginning of the year. You know, with the Obamacare rollout disaster, Benghazi was big in the news at the time, and it just kind of felt like this was going to be another Republican year. But the polling that we saw this week from Mitchell and Epic MRA would seem to indicate this may be more of a competitive race, more like 2012 than it was, you know, a wave year like 2010 or 2008.
Mm-hmm. Well, the interesting about Obamacare is across the country, even I think as this law is taken effect, as the Medicare expansions have been rolled out, you've seen the percent of uninsured people drop dramatically in some cases in certain states. I think it's just become less of an issue. I mean, people who didn't have coverage, who might have been riled up about the concept of an Obamacare, are now like, okay, well, I have health insurance, or I have some kind of coverage now. Maybe this isn't so bad. Maybe while I don't like the concept of it, I'm not as hot and bothered about it as I was at the beginning of this year or the end of last year.
And then going forward with that, the Republicans, I don't know if they found a good message to replace Obamacare with, too.
Really?
I mean, the playing field's kind of flattened out a little bit. I mean, I know the Democrats tried to drum up this whole thing about impeaching Obama. I think that was just a fundraising tool.
Yeah, they raised some money off that, though.
They did, but it just hasn't generated excitement. The governor's race here, though, John, I think it's safe to say we're going to see a lot of money being spent between now and then. Personally, I'm just waiting to see when the governor's deciding he's going to want to start campaigning and actually take this race seriously, because I really haven't gotten the impression from him that he really wants this like he wanted this 4 years ago.
Obviously, 4 years ago, he didn't have the office. So you can take off all the official duties off his plate back then, and it's going to look a lot more like he really wanted it. Now he's got to deal with stuff like the Detroit flood. He's got to deal with stuff like the Detroit bankruptcy and other issues that come across his desk as an acting governor. I think you'll see a lot more activity after Labor Day, because his whole team seems to be sort of gearing towards that strategy. And they certainly have the resources. I would hope they're buying ads time rapidly and gearing up. So I guess we'll know a lot more, I think, in a couple weeks.
Well, they're going to be on the air from Labor Day on to Election Day. And so, I mean, obviously that shows they're serious. But I'm kind of surprised at the shortened field here. I guess I was expecting that they might want to try and take out Schauer while he's still in the crib, you know, back in February, March. You know, I don't know if the Super Bowl ad necessarily had the effect that they had hoped that it would have. And maybe a sustained buy earlier in the year could have widened the polls and put him in a position of putting this away fairly early. But maybe they didn't think that that was going to happen, that if they'd blown their money in April and May, that they wouldn't have any in September, October, November, had it been really close.
But this isn't the first time a strategy's been deployed in the state. I think it was, I was thinking about it last night, wasn't it Debbie Stabenow's first reelect? I don't know if you remember that. They waited past Labor Day before they really rolled up and ramped up, and that was fine. So there's precedent to say this is not a bad strategy.
Right, and let's remember Granholm versus Dick DeVos. Dick DeVos was up in the polls in the summer.
6 points at one point.
Yeah, in the summer.
Over the incumbent.
Let's take a look at, we're going to turn the page here to congressional races. How active do you think the National Democrats will be in our, I don't know, debatably 4, 5 Democratic congressional races?
I think they look at the first, and I think they look at the Wahlberg seat in the seventh. I think that if you look at the percentages there, they're pretty close districts. Wahlberg's is just over 52% Republican base, according to Target Insight. If I remember right, the first is, 53% Republican base? And both those incumbents have pretty strong challengers. And again, going back to the gubernatorial race, that's going to have a huge impact on what happens in these races. If Snyder suddenly opens up a 10-point lead, I think they're less likely to either want to play, because those candidates are going to have less of a chance to win. If it's neck and neck or showers up, I think you have a shot at flipping one of those seats.
And I think that their best shot would probably be the seventh. I think Benishek's record is not as conservative and likely to attack as Wahlberg's is. Mm-hmm. I know that the Democrats love their candidate and Jerry Cannon out there, but I think if that gets close, I think the Republicans feel like they have a lot of material on Jerry Cannon from his time as the Kalkaska County Sheriff. You know, there's always lawsuits that have been filed when you're a person in office like that. He was also an official at Guantanamo Bay when they had detainees there. There's always issues you can drag up there and hit him over the head with. So I think there's plenty of negatives that they could use on Cannon just if the race gets close. Whereas I think that Wahlberg race, he, for whatever reason, he always runs really tight races, and he's got a conservative record. He didn't want to end the shutdown. I think that there's stuff that they can use on him that could be a little bit more damaging. Obviously, we're going to keep an eye, though, on David Trott in the 11th and whether McKenzie can do anything there, but, you know, you got a resource question there.
Got a huge resource question there. McKenzie's a good candidate, got a good resume. But that's a 55% Republican-based district. You've got a candidate who can self-fund. The question is, are we going to relitigate, sorry for the use of the term, but are we going to relitigate the foreclosure king storyline and whether or not you can make that play again? Is a question, but that's a tough district for a Democrat to take, and especially with a well-funded, self-funded opponent like David Trott.
And the same thing could obviously be said in the 8th district there with Mike Bishop going up against the Ingham County Treasurer, Eric Schertzing. You know, again, the numbers just don't look all that great. If the Democrats seem to be doing really well, that's a possibility. But again, I don't know how much money Schertzing can put up against Bishop, who still had money left over after knocking off McMillan.
I think if you're a national group, you put the 11th and the 8th. If you make a decision, you put it in pencil. If you're going to challenge it, you're going to spend some money there. You might want to erase it, depending on what happens in the next month.
You know, I said 4 or 5 races, and just for our listeners' benefit, the 5th race that I was mentioning is this challenger against Fred Upton. And, John, you got our 2014 Michigan election guide in your hand. And I mention him because he is raising a lot of money in the 6th district there. I'm sorry if I said 5th. He is raising a heck of a lot of money, and I just saw that he had an ad on TV as well. I just got to give him a shout-out. I don't think he's going to win, but I think that he deserves a shout-out for the kind of campaign he's put together. He's been extremely aggressive on fundraising. And Paul Clements.
Western Michigan University professor. He's had a couple of fairly decent ads he's put up already.
Yeah.
He's a decent-looking candidate, but it'll be interesting. That's a pretty conservative district, too. I mean, we have a base here. Rick Snyder run that race by 63.8%. That's a 53.9% Republican base there. So it'd be interesting to watch.
Joining me this week for the podcast, Greg McMaster, State Representative. Representative, thanks for joining us on the podcast this week.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for asking me.
Well, we're a few weeks removed now from the primary election. Obviously, you were not successful. How have you come to terms here with the loss?
Well, I came to terms pretty quick when I looked at the numbers that were coming in and saw that they were higher than what I had expected to see, and the distance between my percentage and my opponent's percentage really gave me thought, gave me wonder of where did the extra votes come from. And I knew ahead of time that we were going to see some crossover votes from the Democrat side, but I didn't know it was going to be as much as it was. My team did everything they could. I couldn't be more proud of my campaign team, my wife, who was my campaign manager, Murray Communications. Everybody did everything we could. It couldn't have taken more money to offset what had happened. We did it with honor. We did it with respect and integrity. We did it by the book. And I walked off the field holding my head high, even though we had lost. And I'm still today very happy with a lot of the constituents who patted me on the back and said, you know, it's a shame that you lost because you were the most admirable representative we've had. You ran a perfect race, textbook, exactly the way we want it, and your opponent didn't.
Well, let's talk about that, because it seemed like initially the polls were on your side, and then things went negative, and the tide seemed to turn. Do you think that's what ended up turning it?
Well, I'm sure some of the negative ads did have some of an impact, but even within the last 5 days, when we looked at some internal polling, we saw that we were still ahead by 12 to 15 points, even with a marginal amount of Democrat crossover votes. Little did we know that we were going to see almost 8,000 crossing over. Had they not crossed over, we would have won the race. And how do you anticipate that much of a crossover? If your opponent has to go to the other side of the aisle to ask for votes or beg for votes, I don't know how to be able to fight that. There is really no way to do it.
Do you think Wayne Schmidt in particular went low here on you?
I think the entire team did. I had a lot of negative ideas brought to me from people in Lansing that know my opponent. And they brought some salacious negative information, and they wanted to go out into the media. And I was very adamant and said, no, we cannot do that. We want to run a perfect campaign and keep it on the issues and only about the issues and nothing
else. But maybe you could have won if you'd gotten in the mud.
But it's not about winning, going into the mud. It's about doing the right thing for the right reasons. And that's what we needed to do. People outside of Lansing, the perception of politics is that it's dirty. Nobody wants to do it because of the slime tactics. Nobody is going to run for office that have good intentions if this is what they're going to be up against. So I proved to them that you can run a positive campaign and keep it to the issues only. And unfortunately, in this case, yeah, we did lose. To me, it wasn't about winning. It was about doing the right thing because that's what my constituents wanted.
Have you talked to your mom or your daughter since the campaign?
No, I haven't talked to my mom for over 24 years.
Okay.
You know, this isn't the only time that she's wanted to see me fail in life. There's been other times where she's tried to undermine my opportunities to succeed in media, and even in when I was in high school. And there wasn't very much time when we were together anyway. So we are removed and very distant, and I moved on with my life and been able to put that to rest. It's nothing I did wrong. I just think that she had quite a negative feeling about my father, and because I'm the firstborn, she's put that on me. So she has to live with that. Not me. I've been able to move on with my daughter. You know, going back into some of the documents, she was removed from my house because of her attachment to drugs. And she refused to give that up and try to clean up her lifestyle. So she made decisions in her life that she has to live with. I still love my daughter, but I'm not going to hold anything against her because of her decisions. That's how we learn, how we grow up in life. I'm the same way. We are who we are by how we live our life and the decisions that we've made. And if we can learn and overcome them, we become better people.
Have you talked to Wayne Schmidt?
Just recently once when I called him up to concede, and then briefly when he came in on the House floor and shook my hand and asked to hope everything was going to be okay, but there are some things that are coming to light that we really have to step back and take a good look on how we move forward in the future.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean that on my trip to Niagara Falls to try to release and get away from everything, my wife and I looked at it, and we gave a good 3.5 years as state representative. My whole family was involved in it. Is this what we want to do? Do we want to continue on in politics? So we wanted to leave the door open to any and all opportunities that presented itself. Certainly, if there wasn't a negative ad campaign and it was only on the issues and I lost, I'd be back behind my my opponent 100%. We would move forward in unity. But because of the amount of votes that were persuaded by the Dems to come over to the Republican side to lose the race for me, there might be an opportunity to go back and look and see, okay, in the general election, if they don't do that, where will the numbers lie? I mean, independents that have written in have won. Dugan is one of them. So there are opportunities that are out there, and I'm being heavily courted on to take a good, serious look at that.
You mean to run as a write-in?
Yes.
As an independent?
Yes.
Can you do that?
Well, the law says you can do it. I mean, if you're not on the ballot by July, you would be a write-in as long as it's done before the end of October.
So you could, even though you couldn't run as an independent, you could run as a write-in?
Can run as a write-in, yes.
And you haven't ruled this out yet?
I keep everything on the table. I don't push anything aside. I'm looking for all opportunities. I've got private sector opportunities that are looking as well. My overall goal in my life is to want to be able to educate the public. I've learned a lot as a state representative working inside government, and there's a lot of things that can be changed. And the messages that are sent to their constituents are changed a bit. They don't really know what's going on. There's a disconnect. I want to be able to educate them and help bring them up to a level where they feel solid and understanding and educated about what we're doing in politics. So there might be an avenue for me to do that outside of government rather than inside.
But to run as a write-in, I mean, that would be a pretty uphill battle, wouldn't it?
It would be. And up until today, I can't remember of any write-in candidate that won except for Dugan. So the possibility is there. But I'm looking at how the campaign was run. We did everything right.
Mm-hmm.
Even with the negative ads, we still would have won. But because of the crossover votes, if that's what it took for my opponent to win, he didn't run on issues. He ran to win. And to me, that was a disservice to the constituents of Northern Michigan. They felt they were robbed.
When do you have to make a decision on that?
I don't know. I have to go back and take a look and talk to some people. I had meetings scheduled later on this afternoon. And to court that idea, we still have to do some research. So I don't know yet.
All right. Now, some would say, well, Jesus is just Greg McMaster being sour grapes here to even consider this.
Not really. If you take all of them out and there's an opportunity for people to come back, if the Republicans felt they were robbed in this election and they have a second chance to come back, they may come back with a greater understanding of responsibility and how they should vote, and that could change. So they could have a second option here. I don't see how sour grapes would be it. You know, I knew this was going to be a negative ad campaign. I knew it was going to be bad. I had no idea that they were going to go to the level that they did and pay, you know, one of my family members to come out against me. But, you know, people do whatever they're going to do to win. If that's what it takes for them to win, then they lost in the very beginning. You know, we walked off the field holding our head high. We knew we lost, but we lost with honor. We lost with respect. You know, the opponent walked off with a trophy to win, but he lost a lot of respect from a lot of people up north and is dishonored. And to me, I can't put my head on a pillow at night knowing I won playing the tactics that he did.
You said that your opponent paid a family member to come out against you?
I don't know who paid. Early on in the campaign, somebody said that one of your family members, a paid family member, came forward, and we didn't know who that was, and that was months before the election, and we didn't find out until, what, a week and a half, 2 weeks before the election.
Have you seen any evidence that this happened?
No, I haven't seen anything, and frankly, I wouldn't put it past my daughter, but I just moved on. You know, it's not one for me to go back and have to research it and dig everything through there, because if I do find it, is that going to change the outcome? No, it won't. It's just time to move on from that. You know, my daughter is distant to me for a reason. You know, all of us who have had children, there are families that are out there that, you know, there are going to be deviant children. No matter how hard you try to be a parent, they just don't want it. And she never graduated high school. She left. She ran away early. You do the best you can and you move on.
Did you ever think about getting together some of your other family members to come out and support? And maybe you did, and I just missed it.
Yeah, I did. Yep, they did come out. They wrote letters after the first 2010 election, and they said that never happened, and then they wrote letters of support.
Okay, very good. You've only got, then 4-5 months left here in this chamber. Sure. Anything in particular that you want to see done here?
I'd like to see some of the legislation that I put forward moving through, protecting personal property rights, private property rights, things like that, and just help the caucus overall as they move forward.
Very good. Greg McMaster, thanks for joining us on the podcast this week.
Thanks for having me.
That's going to do it for this week's edition of MERS Monday. Thanks to John, Lauren, and Greg McMaster. John, when are we going to get the snack box refilled anyway? I think we're down to like dust bunnies and crumbs in that thing.
Dust bunnies and candy bars from 1996.
Is the rookie reporter got to be the one who makes the call to the the SOS call to the snack box? Since
I don't know.
We're about ready to eat the cardboard now.
Yeah, I brought some snacks myself because, you know, I walked in and the snack box seemed a little sad, so had to bring my own.
We're down to the things that we just don't want to eat, is where we're at right now.
Pretty much desperation Doritos that are crushed in the back of the box.
Desperation Doritos, that's a good one.
All right, well, next week we'll hope that the snack box has been refilled. We'll give you an update because I know you all listening care. But until then, that's going to do it for this week's edition of MERS Monday. Go green and take care.